Good afternoon. This is Kathleen McCoy, and you're listening to Hometown Alaska. Now, I wonder if you ever do this. Open your closet door, look in your closet, closed closet door, and look in there and say, I have absolutely nothing to wear. Or maybe it's, there's nothing in here I want to wear. Well, I hope our show today will be inspiration for you because Object Runway is our topic and wearable art is our topic. And we don't exactly know what it is. We're going to talk about it today. We've got two great guests in the studio with us who are going to sort it out. Welcome Holly McGuinn.
Thank you.
She's representing the International Gallery of Contemporary Art and is also a designer herself and organized this year's event. And Karen Lowell, who also participated in this year's event, but also launches many new designers into this field by teaching fabric construction at UAA and making them enter, or strongly suggesting that they enter. So, you know, if we hope you've got questions about what wearable art is, because we do, and we'd love to hear from you. So give us a call. You can talk to Holly and Karen at 550-8433. If you're outside Anchorage, we'll still talk to you. It's at 1-888-353-5752. And if you're really shy, we'll take email to hometown@alaskapublic.org. This program is going to repeat this evening. It's a broadcast recording. You can't call in then, but that's at 7. And it's also archived on our website. So if you miss it or you want to visit many, many, many times, you can. It's archived at alaskapublic.org. Also, if you didn't go to Project Object Runway, I know I'm going to say Project Object all day long. If you didn't go to Object Runway, don't feel left out of the show because we've got a great 10-minute video up on alaskapublic.org that showcases a lot of the pieces in the show. And we've also put links to Hal Gage's photos and Michael Conte's photos and the Anchorage Daily News little slideshow that they did. So there's a time for you to get oriented and then call in and ask your questions. So let's get back to the topic at hand, which is trying to decipher what is wearable art. So Karen, is it a social movement? Is it an anti-fashion movement? Is it a anti-consumer movement? What do you think?
Well, I think it's probably a combination of a lot of things. There definitely is a fashion component. I think there's something about the runway and the lights and the glamour that activates the fashion consciousness. But I don't think it's lodged particularly in functional clothing. So a lot of the pieces that are in Object Runway have to do with taking the idea of garments and then moving them into something other than just sort of rational clothing items. So you do get things that are more sculptural or more fantastic or really inventive. You also get, you know, pieces that are really fashionable that you could wear out. So One of the things about the International Gallery when they started this event is they were playing off the idea of Project Runway. So there's a deadline. You know, you've got to create a line in a very short amount of time. But they didn't want to restrict it in a particular way. So the first year they did have categories, and then last year it moved out of categories, and it really is anything goes. You know, anything that you can make, even if you're not a couture designer, you can put things in there. That's what's great about the event is that it's completely open.
Lots of self-expression.
Lots.
So the idea that I could open my closet and wear one of those things to work is probably not really going to happen.
You could wear
in
it.
In some cases.
Depends
on where you work.
That's true. And whether you want to continue working there.
Right.
I wanted to let our listeners know that we also invited a couple of the designers who participated in Object Runway to join us and give us a little feel for what brought them into wearable art and what gave them the inspiration for the piece that they had in the show. And actually, we already have Michael Conte on the line.
Yay. So hi, Michael.
Hello.
Hi, Michael.
Hey, can you hear me?
We can hear you just fine.
Oh, yeah. What was the question again?
Oh, it's something like, what brought you to wearable art and what inspired your pieces, actually.
Well, what brought me there was I was asked to shoot photographs last year for Object 2, and then this year I was going to do the photos again, but I had this other thing, this running theme going through my work of Don Quixote. So the story and the character of Quixote informed my three pieces. I had Don, I had Sancho Panza, and Dulcinea. So it was sort of like a ensemble piece.
And please link up the hockey for us?
Oh, hockey. Well, yeah. Hockey is another running theme in my work, and this is video and still photos and not really making costumes before this, but I use this opportunity to make a mashup, make a Don Quixote of the North. In the story, his quest is so absurd and irrational, and I find the sport of hockey to be a really funny, irrational, absurd sport in general. So it just seemed to work for Alaska.
Do you know how to sew, or how did you do? Did you weld things together? How did you put it together?
No, I used duct tape a lot. my stuff. I did. I had home ec in high school, I borrowed a sewing machine to do a few things, and I bought one of those. I don't even know what you call it. It's like a leather sewing thing that you punch. You know, it's like a punch with a needle. So I sort of, have sewed some things and repaired things over the years.
So you had a little bit of skill.
Yeah, but, I just do things. And I was going to sew all the beer cans onto the shorts, but when I started to duct tape them in place just to hold them in there so I could then sew it, I realized I didn't need to sew anything. I could just duct tape it. And I used a lot of hockey tape, too, to kind of keep in the theme.
And tell me the skates, and what were the skates in, like concrete? I mean, what was that?
No, they were frozen into ice.
So that was really ice?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Thank God for cold weather, because I was able to freeze those into ice, and then Brian, the actor, the model, Don Quixote, we did a test, and they were just way too slippery, of course. and so I broke them apart, and I refroze them with ice grippers in the bottom. That was actually a reference. Brian came up with that, and that's a reference to an old Laurie Anderson performance piece where she wore skates that were frozen into ice outdoors and played the violin until they melted and disappeared. So,
yeah, that was a great loop. So for me, as the art part of it, there are all these performance references you can make, and Michael, when you're connecting your work to photo work, and you're not a designer or a fashion person, but that you could, and you started back in October. Thinking and making and coming up with possibilities and just sort of pushing your way through to this beautiful conclusion. I mean, they were just really strong, great visual pieces, design-wise. I love that I got to look at them in the gallery last night with the text from Don Quixote on the gloves and the shorts. That's great.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting detail. Yeah. Something we didn't see from the audience, but people can see, actually. This is going to be a First Friday.
Yeah.
And I think almost all the pieces are going to be up, and you can get real close and look, right?
Mm-hmm. And the majority of them will be there. And we really encourage the designers to put their pieces downtown. So a lot of times people will have gone to the show. Like, for example, myself, I went to the show and I was looking through the photos and I said, I really wish I had more time to look at that piece because, as a person is walking down the runway, it's going by so quickly and you might not be able to see the nuances of the piece. So that's what the First Friday show offers.
Right.
So if you did go to the show, you kind of get that second chance to really spend some time with those pieces.
Absolutely. And tell people where the gallery is just in case they don't know.
It's 427.
You go all the time, but you don't look at the address.
I go down the alley.
427 D Street.
D Street.
It's between 4th and 5th on D Street. It's close to Cyrano's, across from Phyllis's Salmon Bake.
Okay, and that's what, Friday from 5:30 to 7:30 or something like that.
And the other thing they'll have at the opening is they shot a video of the event, and they'll have a big screen TV so you can watch the whole thing again, and they'll have the panels that they had on the stage, so it's going to have a little bit of the glam of the event.
Of the runway. Okay, well, that's great.
And the DVDs, we have some that are available for purchase.
Oh.
So for the designers or for, you know, anybody who wants to purchase them, they're available there.
Right, right. And I understand that you actually had more people who wanted to get into the show than could get into the show. Mm-hmm. So this is something about, it took off. Oh, by the way, Michael, I'm sorry. I left you hanging there. I was going to say, Brian Hutton is probably never going to wear your outfit to work, right?
Well, I don't know. I wouldn't put it past him.
There could be an under 30 in that, right?
You know, he might well do that because he works with kids doing poetry slams and theater. And, you know, why not? I have to give a lot of credit to my actors. You know, they're not, in my case, they weren't models. I had actors. And Brian Hutton embodied Don Quixote. My other actor, DeRoy Brandt, was Sancho Panza. He did an excellent job. And Shel Gonzalez, who's also a designer, was a great Dulcinea.
Right.
Who is Don Quixote's love interest.
Right.
So I think a lot of people didn't connect her with the other two as much. It was easier to miss. I don't know. It was something about, you know, they weren't on stage at the same time. But anyway, I think I credit 90% of the success of that to the actors and how they pulled it off.
And, I mean, I love the writing in the program. Don Quixote is a warrior goon with no idea what's going on.
That sounded really good when they read it out loud.
Yes, it did. Okay. It did. So this was your first Wearable Art Show, maybe not your last?
Well, they invited the Don to the next thing, which is that festival.
The Eye of the Beholder.
Okay.
And so I'm going to definitely continue to shoot photos at Object. And you know, if I get a good idea, maybe we'll do something next year. But I think of myself as a, you know, a director and a costume designer in this kind of sense. So, you know, why not roll with that?
Yeah, yeah.
Fantastic.
Come all. Well, thanks a lot, Michael. Really appreciate you taking a little time to share, because I wanted to hear from designers and kind of where their idea came from, and yours was a really interesting and curious one, and so it's great to hear that it was literary inspiration for you.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Thanks so much for shooting those wonderful photographs.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. And they're on Alaska Public. And I don't know if they're going to be at the gallery also. I don't know. No,
they are on the Object Runway 3 Facebook page.
Right. That's great. And that's, I think, the link that we put on Alaska Public. So
exactly.
Hopefully everybody will find them. So thanks a lot, Michael. So anyway, back to our discussions before Michael joined us. Let's see. I thought when I was sitting there, wow, this is a big money maker for the gallery. How fabulous, you know.
So yes, thousands of dollars
yes,
roll in.
I was corrected. So let's share that with people. They don't know.
Well, this year, it was probably the most financially feasible of the years. The first year, it was just
a scene.
How did Donnell describe it? Gonzo?
Yeah. Well, Gonzo. Yeah. I mean, it was one of those things. They had the idea and they said, where are we going to have it? Oh, let's have it at the Anchor Pub. Let's see if anybody will enter. And they really didn't even believe that anybody would even wouldn't catch. Like maybe they'd get 15, 20 people and it'd be kind of this little modest thing. And it just turned into a freaking mob scene.
Yeah. And I was taking tickets that year, and thankfully I was pregnant, so I didn't have as many people yelling at me as otherwise. Turns out I was actually pretty far along at the time, but regardless, it was nice to see so many people really wanting to participate, wanting to come, wanting to see what was going on. And I, you know, from the perspective of the gallery, we were really surprised and pleased, but kind of taken aback by just the response that we had from the community, not just people wanting to participate, but also people wanting to, have some kind of relationship.
It was a party. I mean, it really, sometimes in the gallery situation or in the art world, you can go to events and there's very definitely a distinction between the makers and the participants, but the line gets really blurry with the Object Runway stuff. And that event in particular, you know, it's sweaty, it was crowded, people couldn't see, but you could have a little, you know, toddy or whatever, you could hoot and holler. It was really something else. They had, and the thing that I think they did successfully is they pulled in the media, the mixed, the multimedia. So they had projection screen stuff going on. They had an MC. They had
this is all at
the Anchor, yeah.
At the Anchor, the first one.
Yeah, and then so, but the problem was it really was too crowded. You couldn't see, and so when they moved it to the Beartooth, it did become much more of a kind of a production oriented. Event, more kind of clearly delineated, but and it's always messy. I mean, the backstage stuff is just because they have to, you know, the Beartooth is there to make money, so the crew rolls in Thursday morning with everything ready to go, and that stage gets built, the panels go up, all the sound work, all of the dressing room has to be built, all of that
scary.
Has to happen. And then the great thing is as soon as the event's over, it's all got to go out. Uh-huh. It's all got to get moved out because they got stuff going on the next day.
Right. We have another caller, so I just want to share her. And Zena, welcome
hey,
to...
Hey, Zena.
Hi.
Hello.
welcome to Hometown Alaska.
Hi, well, thanks. I'm glad to be on. I have a bit of a cold, so I might start going into a coughing fit, so I apologize in advance.
Oh, we're sorry, and if I had a glass of water, I'd hand it to you right now.
Thanks
for taking the time to call. We thought it would be fun to hear from designers about how they arrived at Object Runway and what inspired them, and you had two pieces this year. You want to tell us a little bit about them?
I did, yeah. I'd love to. So I had two pieces in the show, and I actually developed the pieces while I was working on an artist residency in Argentina. And I had been thinking about working with tea for quite a while, and initially my inspiration kind of came from the idea of, you know, the Tea Party, kind of the new resurgence of the Tea Party and tea baggers and, you know, with all the
politics,
history.
Yeah.
And politics behind tea and the Boston Tea Party. And so I thought about creating several different kind of ideas around that concept and installations around tea and creating a big tea party dress. But then when I started gathering materials and working on it, it became much more subdued and kind of more romantic. And so instead of creating this more kind of political party dress, I ended up doing a really kind of quiet evening gown.
Mm-hmm.
And the tea, and I just kept having to buy more and more tea bags.
Did you drink all that tea, or did you just...
Initially, my plan was to use used tea bags, and I was collecting tea bags from friends and from myself. But then when I started doing this project, I used fresh tea bags. And I think it was actually really important, because something that you weren't really able to see at the show was that I had used the tea itself to stain and color the dress. And so I had to sew them on fresh and then kind of soak them with different amounts of water.
So you wouldn't have known exactly what it was going to look like.
Right. No, I didn't when I was working with it. And I hand sewed each of the tea bags on the dress. And there are some on the outside, which are much more apparent, but there's a bunch of them that are layering the inside, which create a different texture.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure that's very apparent either without looking at it close up.
Yeah. Will your tea dress be at the First Friday?
For sure, yeah.
Yes.
Great.
And it's really beautiful. I got to see things last night. We're going to start installing tonight. But the staining, that kind of bloom of brown, and then the way that the edges move into was it silk? Did you use silk?
It was chiffon.
It's so beautiful. It's
mm-hmm.
just gorgeous.
So I can't wait to stand close to that, and I'll never think about tea the same way again. I mean,
well,
it's been a garment,
you know,
now.
It was such a labor making that garment, and you know, I had been awarded this residency and kind of proposed doing about three pieces. And I had 3 weeks, and I was working full-time, 10 to 6 every day, working on these dresses. And the residency was having an exhibition, and I had worked so hard on the tea dress that I didn't want to do another piece. And the residency director had encouraged me and kind of told me, you know, I want you to have two pieces. And so I started working on the second dress, which was the ostrich dress.
Mm-hmm.
Where I just used, it was 6 or 7 meters of taffeta that I had sewn about a 1-inch border. I had probably made about 5 feet long and 6-inch to 8-inch wide strips of taffeta and sewed about an inch border on it lengthwise and then shredded it. And I did that to about 6 meters. And then I created a wire armature for the bottom of the piece and then kind of a tube top for the top portion. And also ended up having to hand sew a majority of that garment.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
There was a lot of red, billowy, floating, ostrich tail there. All hand sewn, huh?
Pretty much. I mean, that one, the tea dress, I used a sewing machine to do the basic dress, but then all of the tea was hand sewn. And with the ostrich dress, aside from doing the 1-inch kind of borders, it was all pretty much hand sewn.
It was amazing to me the way that fabric moved like feathers. It really, I thought it was feathers at first, and then you kind of realize it's not. So that's just amazing.
Well, and last year's piece, this is the other part of it. She won last year's Object Runway, and that was canvas that was treated to look like birch bark. So there's this idea, and Zine is a master at this, taking materials and getting them to look like these other materials. And it's not about, you know, being an excellent seamstress. That piece was, last year's piece was hand-sewn and kind of built around Amy, right?
Yeah.
So.
A quick question I have for you and Zina about that is, were you, prior to last year's Object Runway, were you involved much in constructing garments or anything like that? Or was this event really influential to you in that way? What role does this event play in your inspiring you?
I had been interested in taking sewing classes for a long time. I love fashion design and I love sculpture. And so I had been really interested in learning it more traditionally and appropriately. I had worked on pieces before that were wearable art or that were part of performances that I had done, but nothing in terms of creating a garment that I was going to present. And so Object Runway was really kind of motivation for me to put those two forms that I had been really interested in together, both fashion design and sculpture, and kind of jump kicked my work with wearable art. But I still don't know how to sew appropriately.
so that's not a skill you must have, but you must be good with glue, probably, or duct tape, as Michael Conti said.
I can use a sewing machine, and I can make it work. I don't know how to do things like finish a seam or.
Uh-huh. Well, but that I think is like that. that's what's great. That's for me. I'm teaching these classes, and the great thing is that people, if you approach the idea of construction as rough drafting and working with the basic form, you can come up with solutions that don't necessarily have to be part of that, craftsmanship vocabulary.
Right. Uh-huh.
That's good.
Yeah. And getting back to this idea of what Object Runway, the intention is, and we had said earlier that we don't have any categories and there's no restrictions. The piece that the designer makes has to just be able to move down a runway.
Right.
So there's no restrictions. Mm-hmm. And the first year I was a designer as well, and I had this fabric that I had gotten years before in Africa, actually, that was hand dyed, by some wonderful women there in Africa. And I had always wanted to do something with it. And this event gave me the chance to do it. I approached it in a very traditional fashion way. Mm-hmm. But that wasn't necessarily
the only way.
No. Yeah. And I was really inspired by all these other people doing really wonderful things. And I think keeping that spectrum.
Yeah,
has been really
important.
Valuable.
Yeah. And it's important to keep that. That first year, there really were some, hilariously brilliant pieces. Jimmy mm-hmm. Reardon did a Starbucks coffee cozy.
Oh, I saw a picture of that. Yeah.
So, it's like, I'm going to wear a cardboard coffee cozy down the runway. It was great. Mm-hmm. And last year, there was a beautiful piece that was sort of a tent-like shaman figure that was very, very strange and very beautiful and moving and not fashion. Mm-hmm. Nothing at all that you would wear. It was an object.
I want to welcome Hal Gage. Hal, hi.
Hey, Hal.
Hi, Hal.
Master photographer guy. Thanks so much.
Welcome to Hometown Alaska, Hal. I know you took pictures of everything there. What's your reaction to the show?
Well, I've been there for all three of the object runways so far. And although I'm not going there to document the scene, my photographs do kind of serve as that. I go in there really to kind of make my own little art project of the event as it's happening. But I found that the event is just amazingly energizing.
Why? How?
Oh, just the activity, the bizarreness, especially backstage of just these bizarre costumes moving around and interacting with one another, and then just the crowd reactions, how the models handle themselves when they're on the runway. It's just an amazing energetic.
There is. I think that the bear tooth was levitating. I mean, I was just in the audience. I wasn't backstage, but the crowd in the audience was really having fun too. And they all had their little phones out trying to read the schedule and see who's what and discussing and cheering. A lot of people were cheering for somebody they knew up mm-hmm. there. It was very lively, very, very engaging for people, you know? Mm-hmm. So that must be part of what works, you know, what worked for you, Hal, is kind of what works for the audience too.
And works for the volunteers.
Oh, yeah. The volunteer. You would not believe the army of people backstage that are coordinating, that are planning, that are building, that have built, have been organizing. I mean, it starts easily in August, the planning stages.
Mm-hmm, planning, definitely.
An army, really, of people who are doing this because they love the event. You never see them. You don't ever see these people. They're right. Behind. They're steering the models down to the stage. They're directing traffic out in the lobby. They're making sure that everybody has the right number on their wrist. All the forms have to be filled out. Everybody needs to know where they're going to stand and what. It's phenomenal.
It takes a village to have a fashion show. Right?
And I don't think that we could have had such an amazingly successful event without the support of the Beartooth also.
Yeah.
They, you know, it is their venue, and so they have to be concerned about certain things. But just through the whole planning process, they have been particularly wonderful. Steph Johnson, Rolando Guzman, and Adam Holland in particular, just very helpful.
Well, it's amazing that they had to take all those tables out and put mm-hmm. all those seats in, and then take those seats out and put all those tables back in for the next night. So that was amazing to me. I just want folks to know, if they've just joined us, we're talking about Object Runway. We're talking about wearable art. I have Karen Lowell in the studio with me and Holly McGuinn. And we've been hearing from some of the designers who've called in, and I think we're probably going to hear from a few more in the second half. But if you have questions, I mean, maybe you want to get into this and you're thinking, could I? Mm-hmm. These are two people who are perfect to ask, you know, and maybe even you've got an idea you want to throw out there for them and see what they say. It's a very low barrier entry to participate, except get there on time, right?
Yeah.
Because you had to turn people away.
Well, turning people away at that, you know, in the design process, and then also at the door, because now this is the third year where it's sold out, you know. So once you get a whiff of it, you have to kind of get on it.
Yeah.
And we added 100 seats this year. So there was an additional 100 tickets that were sold.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's incredible.
Yeah. So, and it's still sold out prior to the event, the date of the event.
Well, more on wearable art and Object Runway. We're going to take a little break. This is Kathleen McCoy, and you're listening to Hometown Alaska.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska on KSKA Anchorage. If you missed part of today's program or would like to listen again to Hometown Alaska, the program repeats tonight at 7 on FM 91.1. Remember, tonight's rebroadcast is recorded and will not be taking phone calls. You can subscribe to free podcasts of Hometown Alaska on our website at alaskapublic.org. This is KSKA Anchorage.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. Object Runway is our topic this afternoon, wearable art, and including talking about a show that's going to come up in March. So if you're just getting a whiff of this, it's not too late to get involved. I'd also like to let folks know if they didn't actually make it to the show, they can still really get an eyeful at alaskapublic.org. There's a video there, almost 10-minute video, showing a lot of the gowns and the fun at the event. And we've got the slideshows that were provided by various photographers and the newspaper. And as we continue now, I've got Holly McQuinn and Karen Lowell in the studio with me, both participants and really active in this event. And I'd like to welcome Sarah Davies, who's just joined us. Sarah was one of the designers. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. How are you guys?
Sarah. Hi.
We're good. We're so glad you took the time out to call. Sarah's piece actually won Object Runway.
Mm-hmm. Brilliant piece.
And
crazy good.
I think it would be worth just reading the description just for a second, if I may, mm-hmm. Because it's so intriguing. And then, Sarah, I hope you'll explain this to us. This gown was made of burlap twine, 6 species of grasses, aspen and alder branches, rusted tin, railroad spikes, and 45 magnum shells. So you have to ask, how did that all come together? You described it, I guess it was you, Sarah, harvested from the Bonanza Trail tree line, the dry glacial outwash channels of the Kennecott, the rugged edges of McCarthy Road, and the scarred chambers of a Smith & Wesson. The organic and inorganic materials that compose this gown represent the industrial, biotic, and human decay that occupy the historic mining settlements of Kennecott, McCarthy, and the savage beauty of creation and destruction. That's really heavy for me. Tell us about it.
I struggled over that description, actually. I had a hard time getting it down to 400 characters.
Oh, that was that the limit for the catalog?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. I'm deeply inspired by I've just recently moved to Alaska from New York, and I was plopped down into the middle of the McCarthy Valley, or the Kennecott Valley rather, out in Wrangell St. Elias National Park 2 summers ago, and it was overwhelmingly inspiring. But I bring with me also my city qualities. I lived in New York City for 14 years, and that's very much a part. Well, it's absolutely all of my adult life, and it's very much a part of who I am. So, I think in this dress, I found a way to sort of, bring some synthesis and synergy to uniting both that incredible natural environment of the Kennecott Valley and the urban edges of New York City. But what I really tried to capture from both of them are the elements of decay, which I'm deeply attracted to and have been for such a long time, be it human decay, be it urban decay, be it natural decay. It's all of those things are very much a part of what I find beautiful.
And Kennecott would have a lot of that, right? I mean, it would have, people have been there extracting minerals and living, and so there's probably layers of things. Is that where you go find your material?
There are absolutely layers of things. It is, all of my metal materials, well, except for the 45 caliber casings. All of my metal materials were harvested from junk piles left behind by not only the original settlement of Kennecott about 100 years ago, but also from some of the more recent communities that have been there as well. Like the main body of the corset of the gown are rusted tin gasoline cans that are, there are several piles of that kind of scrap around the valley.
What is it about decay and corrosion that draws you?
You know, that's really hard to explain because it's such a visceral thing for me. It's something that I experience through my senses, and it's really hard to sort of intellectualize it. But mm-hmm. when you ask that question, I think of rose gardens, and I think of how in the summertime people flock to see these swollen roses, just lush with life and color. But what is also beautiful to me is their waning passage into dormancy and then death. And, you know, the colors and textures of the fruiting bodies of the molds that overwhelm them in autumn, those are fantastic to photograph. And then in winter, the venation of the petals that are exposed as the colors have drained, that sort of life blood has drained out of the roses, that's incredible too, that sort of network of veins, and then what's left behind are these incredible curled carcasses in the winter. Mm. And they're just gorgeous, and all of these forms take life and decay and offer us something beautiful if we want to see that.
Hmm. You know, I want you guys to jump in and ask questions, too, because it's great to hear the designer talk about what was in the thinking behind the piece. But I have one more question to ask before you guys ask. I wanted to know, does this piece tell a story? Is there a story? Is there a person in this dress? Help me, because I'm fascinated by it, and I hope people can see it on the website. And I'm fascinated by the structure, the corset, the texture of the metals. So is there a story there?
Well, it is definitely a physical manifestation of my journey from New York to here and the transformation that I've gone through, going from living a very urban life surrounded by a dense concrete jungle, to being able to walk through grasses that touch my face as I stand. It's incredible. I mean, I can't help but try as hard as I can to capture and embrace what I think is beautiful. And those grasses are beautiful. There are these incredible blues and greens in these grasses in death that they didn't have in life. Mm. And I wasn't sure what was going to happen to these grasses because I harvested them in August, and I didn't know how they were going to transform. But thank goodness they just, you know, in their wane, they swelled again with this beautiful muted palette of browns and blues and purples. Mm-hmm. It's hard to tell the story. I can describe what inspired me, but the person inside the dress, mm-hmm. I'm not sure. I know I see a wasp inside the dress in the corset. Mm. Other people saw a scarecrow inside the dress. It's hard to say.
Go ahead, Karen.
When I saw it, it didn't feel so much like an individual being. It felt like more like an embodiment of a place in a very wild place. And it's interesting that really, the last 3 years, the people that have made garments that have gone on to be finalists or winners are really harnessing some kind of really, I mean, I hate to say this because it might sound even kind of corny, but it's like there's something about the spirit of Alaska and the wildness and the forces that are bigger than people. And it's not, none of them have been like particularly tamed or confined to urban spaces. So mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sheila's piece that first year, the buzzkill, beautiful, crazy, wild thing with saw blades, and then in Zena's last year with the references to the birch trees, and then this year this Kennecott Valley, the mining, the decay. Mm-hmm. It doesn't seem like it's so, I mean, that's the thing about garments is that they automatically make reference to the body, but that doesn't mean that they're always going to be referencing a person. You know, it might be more metaphoric or something.
Yeah, I mean, I kept seeing it like a queen of some sort in that garment, mm-hmm. someone with a lot of power, mm-hmm. but I don't know who exactly. Yeah. So, but just really, really fascinating.
Karen, you bring up an interesting point about it being the winners being very Alaskan oriented, because mm-hmm. one thing I find interesting is from the planning perspective is that a lot of the people who are judges aren't from Alaska.
Right.
So that's an interesting perspective.
Yeah.
And
who were the judges? Let's just run through. There was a model, right? From from where? From Los Angeles or New York?
She's originally Canadian, from BC, and is now in LA through New York. She is a professional model, and that was one of the sort of glitches that we had of the show, because imagine that something that long can go without one glitch. And one of the glitches was we were supposed to show a short film. Well, it's a commercial that she was in that was directed by Martin Scorsese. She is a wonderful person. She is a professional model, but she's also a photographer and is very knowledgeable about fashion and art. And so she was I thought a really good choice. Mm-hmm. Maybe not everybody agrees, but
that's always interesting.
That's always interesting. The question mm-hmm. with any. So the one of the things that I've been talking about with people is like, well, why does it have to be a contest? How come you just can't have just the? I don't think people would come if there wasn't the competition part of it. And it's always arbitrary. Anytime you get into a juried situation or a contest of any sort, it really does hinge on the people that you choose to assess things, and it's just going to be a wide range. We could have had three different, entirely different people who would have come up with five completely different choices. And so, you know, I've had pieces every year, and I never go into it thinking that there's, you know, rejection if they don't get chosen, or acceptance or adulation if they do. It's just part of the fun of the event, you know.
To be there.
Exactly.
To be there, to be, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And even in discussing it with the judges afterwards, they were saying, you know, there were some areas of crossover and there were some areas we didn't necessarily agree on. And, you know, it was just a way that we just tried to make it work is basically what it boils down
right.
to.
Right. And the two other judges?
We had Cindy Salmonen. She is a local graphic designer. Uh-huh. So she has the perspective of design. She's actually a very talented designer. And then we also had LV Gray Jackson, who we know is a city council member. So, and she never spoke about this, but she actually has a background in fashion. She attended FIT in New York when she was younger.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly the date, but yeah, so she has that background as well. And she designs her own gowns.
Right.
Also.
Right. So I wanted, Karen was a designer as well, and I would just love for you to talk a little bit about you had several designs in there, but which one would you like to talk a little bit about?
Oh, well, I think that Rough Beast piece is my all of the pieces that I've done in the last 3 years have been sort of, like you were asking earlier about anti-fashion. I'm totally suspicious of the fashion world and the seduction of beauty, and I'm always interested in subverting our ideas of how that stuff works. And so this piece came out of a project that Enzina and Donnell Smith and I developed for the U-Haul Festival that Jimmy Reardon put together last fall. And Enzina has done a lot of work with hair and notions of sort of civilization and beauty. And so we did this performance piece that resulted in these garments where hair was embedded into felt and cloth. And so this piece I put together was the roughest, rawest, most upsetting and, like, icky combination of textiles. And I think that's interesting, too, that it doesn't always have to be, like, the beautiful silk stuff and the flowing lines. It can be really gutty and unpleasant.
Earthy.
Yeah.
Was it, did you say something about it being a shield or a protection of some sort?
Yeah.
I mean, hair is a protection.
Yeah. I built a little headpiece, so it was kind of making reference of, like, you know, warrior garb and stuff like that. But it is. It's like our garments are just basically an extension of skin, and our hair, you know, if we were animals, that would be the garment. And so that interface between animal and human is interesting to me.
That's really interesting. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just think it really underscores, I'm here to represent the gallery, too. So I wanted to say that it really helps underscore the mission of the gallery. And part of the reason that this whole event was started is also to raise the awareness of an understanding of contemporary art issues. Mm-hmm. As not just as they relate to Alaska, but just as, you know, as they relate to us as human beings, and to support and I'm reading here too.
So to support, get this message out.
And exhibit the work of developing artists and encourage experimental and explorative art, which is essentially what you're discussing too.
Yeah, that was what was fun. You didn't know what was going to come down the aisle, come around that corner.
Bang.
You
there
just
you go.
Had to decipher what's that?
What is it now?
Right. Listen, I want to welcome Elise Rose to
hey,
the show.
Hey, Elise. Yay.
Hello.
Hi.
Can you
Hi.
Hear us? Hi. Welcome to Hometown Alaska.
Thank you.
Elise, I sat behind Elise and ended up talking to her and found out, you know, that Karen was her teacher and had inspired her to enter last year. And then Elise, this year, you went entered big time. So,
I wouldn't say that
Karen inspired me on that, too.
I wouldn't say that the teacher. I get so much inspiration from Elise and her energy and her good ideas. I mean, she would not believe the beautiful things that she makes. She's a beast in terms of, no, seriously, just taking an idea.
That's meant in the best way.
Yeah. I have a lot of students that have ideas and they will execute them. And Elise is the person that will take the idea and execute it and will make it like 5 times, 20 times bigger than the initial idea and will carry it to its logical conclusion. And it's always gorgeously presented. So I'm so glad that you entered this year.
Elise, I have questions for you, but I just want to let our listeners know we're Object Runway today. We're wearable art. Please give us a call if you've got a question to 550-8433 or 1-888-353-5752. And check out our website because we've got images from this show. So if you didn't make it to Object Runway, you can still see what we're talking about and enjoy it. Elise, I would like you to talk about some of the things that were in the show. In fact, your husband actually modeled one of your pieces, right? Tell us about that one.
He did. He did. That was actually just a fun piece. And he and I got such a giggle out of the whole thing. Modeling is, shall we say, not his...
not his day job. He did very well. He walked to the end of the runway and nodded his tie.
Yeah.
Now, how did you make that piece?
Actually, I took one of his old suits and appliqued a bunch of his old ties onto it.
So you get an image, folks, of what he was wearing. Right. I also was really smitten by the lighted spheres. That was one of your dresses, right?
It was. Actually, that one was sort of driven by my model. A friend of my daughter's wanted to model for me, and I wanted to come up with something that would work for her and would also be a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
And
problem solving
happened.
Seems to be like, how did you do that?
Engineering, actually.
Engineering, okay. How did you do that? How were they suspended in that drape?
Well, that ended up being a huge challenge. And what ended up happening was it's always a process, but my first idea was different, and we found these globes on the internet, and I think they're pretty new. And what we did was we got them and drilled a hole in the top and then pulled some of the fabric through the fabric on the little wing part, and then sewed it on. And then on the wing itself, I cut a star and glued the points onto the ball so that it would be fixed in the fabric.
Amazing. So, I mean, like we've been saying here, it can be anything. It was fabulous to see something lit on the stage. Mm-hmm. There was another bodice that lit up.
Yes.
I know I saw that.
Yes.
And you were telling me, Elise, that you couldn't carry a battery pack. Your model couldn't carry a battery pack.
My model could not disguise a battery pack.
So I also want you to share with folks information about Eye of the Beholder, because as I was sitting there that night, you handed me the flyer, and I thought, oh my gosh, people can, if they get excited today, there's something they can aim for. So tell us a little bit about that.
Eye of the Beholder has been going on actually since 2004, but they've only done it every other year. I've just gotten involved. And it originally started out as more of a quilt sort of thing, art quilts, and has shifted to more to wearable art. And there's a show on March 9th, and people can still continue to enter. It is a juried show, but you can continue to apply online, and there's a website, and you can continue to apply. That's been extended to February 23rd. And there will be judges. All of our judges, all of the judges involved will be our local people.
Different idea. Yeah.
Where is it at this year, Elise?
Well, it's going to be at Cross Point Church, which actually has a lovely auditorium, and they've helped us out by providing this venue. It is behind Burlington Coat Factory on Diamond, in the same mall as Joanne Fabrics and close to Fred Meyer on Diamond.
Does it cost to enter?
It's actually a gorgeous auditorium.
Does it cost to enter?
It costs to enter, yes.
And was that true of Object Runway? Okay, so what?
It's $5 a design.
Oh, really, really high entry
level. Yes, you can see where we're making our money. Killing.
How about with Eye of the Beholder?
Eye of the Beholder is a little more expensive. I believe it's $20.
Oh, wow. Okay, we'll have to budget for that. That's great. Well, good. We do have a link to Eye of the Beholder, Alaska Fiber Festival on the alaskapublic.org website. So if folks want to find out more, you can link through to that site and get the details. So, Elise, before you go, I just wanted to ask you about your paper doll. I loved that. It was so
great.
Witty. Tell us where you got that idea from.
Thank you. That was my favorite one of the ones I did. I had just been thinking on paper dolls, and I think they say something about fashion and something about art. They're an interesting combination of the two, and I thought a lot about how can I – that was also an engineering challenge.
Well, I thought it was really fun and really seemed appropriate to be in a fashion show to have those little white tabs on the sides of the dress. So, Elise, thank you so much. And I also wanted to tell people that, you know, people from all walks of life have entered this. We've talked to many artists today. We see the names of many famous Anchorage artists in the program, and then lots of people that we don't know. And you have had another whole career. You're a lawyer, but you were drawn to this craft. So it's kind of neat.
Absolutely. And boy, I'd encourage people who don't see themselves as artists to try it out, because Eye of the Beholder's fun, and, you know, certainly Object Runway is a fabulous, fabulous show.
That's great. Yeah, it was really fun. I can't wait for next year. Elise, thank you so much for taking the time to call.
We'll see you, Elise.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I'd like to welcome Jean. You're on Hometown Alaska.
Oh, hi there. This is really interesting. I wish I would have found out about this earlier, but I've always been interested in fiber arts and wearable art. There was a group that I started to get involved with in Seattle, and I can't remember the name now, but I was just wondering if these are mostly fiber art type shows, or I was looking at the other, or you had the other description about the bicycle parts where it's like non-traditional, non-fabric.
That was people's choice. Yeah.
There was another great piece that was made out of steel. Marion Call wore it. It was completely metal. That
was amazing.
Yeah. I mean, the textile part of it, I think you have to have a little bit of flexibility just so it goes on the body. But no, definitely not just fiber work.
Mm-hmm. And we'd mentioned that a little earlier in the show, that the only requirement for a designer, or excuse me, for a design in Object Runway is that it has to be able to move down the runway.
Right.
And so you could take that any way you want.
We had bike tires last year, rubber inner tubes, party cups. Wood. There was a beautiful wood piece made by... Last year, remember? That was at Eye of the Beholder, made by a furniture designer. It was completely made out of wood. It was beautiful.
Amazing. So there you go, Jean.
Is there any, like, themes or anything like that, or is it pretty much just whatever you think of?
It's whatever you think of.
Yep.
It's really meant as a community-building event, but then also to encourage people to be creative and to think outside of the box and to think in ways that you wouldn't normally think. And so hopefully it's been very inspiring in that way to people who have participated. I know it was for me. Was it inspiring?
I think the idea of having themes is you know, people say, oh, well, it makes it easier to judge. You know what the expectations are. But as an artist, I don't want any.
Don't fence me in.
Yeah. Don't tell me what to do. So yeah,
pretty stuff on Project Runway where they have the pet store theme or the five and dime theme or the candy theme. Yeah.
And that's part of, I think that's part of marketing and making it sort of easily apprehendable. And what I do like about Object Runway, of all of the events that I've seen, is that you just don't know what you're going
right.
to. You have no.
Absolutely.
You cannot anticipate what people will come up with, and you are just delighted.
Mm-hmm. Well, now I know what to do with all that junk I've been hanging
oh,
on.
Oh, good. Right. So you're going to enter next year. Right, Jean?
I think so.
Okay.
Well, thanks, Jean, for calling. And then we've got a little bit of time before we're out of time, and I have some questions for you guys. You know, knowing that you teach a fabric structure, is that?
Fiber structure,
fiber
yeah.
structure.
Yeah.
I want you to sort of, how do you introduce people to this idea? And also, you know, Holly, I want to know, the first time you entered, have you done a lot of art, or you know, how did you come to it? So, jump in.
Okay. The fiber program has been part of the university system for a long time, but the classes have been split up in many places around the state. And just 2 years ago, the weaving program moved from the Mat-Su campus down to Anchorage. And with that, there are two other classes that the university offers, and I'm teaching one of them because we don't have the facilities yet. But the one that I teach, and I make an assignment in the fall for the students in the springtime that they have to make a garment for Object Runway. But it's a class that's more like a survey of all of the textile processes, and we cover just a huge range of materials and techniques. So I cover, you know, I call them linear processes, where you take basically like yarn and you can construct textiles like knitting, crochet, twining, knotting. We do a little bit of percussive textile work, which is papermaking and felt making.
Mm-hmm.
We do some embellishment. And then just recently, and it was through this trip I took last summer down to this place in Santa Cruz called The Fabrica. I've always sewn since I was a kid. My mom had the Great Old Singer, and I've just always made stuff. And I thought, oh, everybody knows how to sew. Well, they don't. And so I realized that there's this huge desire for people to be able to work a sewing machine, to be able to do garment construction. So the last couple times I've taught this class, there's been a big component in garment construction. One of the good exercises is to go to Value Village and just get a jacket and take it apart and see how it's put together. And then either repurpose it, reassemble it, make something else out of the pieces. And this semester, we're going to have about a 4-week unit where we will just work on individual components of garment construction. You know, how do you put a zipper in? How do you sew buttonholes? How do you put an arm in something so it doesn't look dorky?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
I wouldn't say that it's art necessarily, but the skills, the mechanical skills and the technical skills, that you use when you do that would lead to the confidence in being able to build something.
So you can mm-hmm. move past duct tape.
Yes, exactly, yeah.
And Holly, how about you? We just have about a minute left. How about you? How did you get involved?
Well, it really is tied to the gallery. I have been either a studio artist at the gallery or a board member for the last, I think, 8 years. Mm-hmm. And just seeing how they supported me as an artist back when I was not that I'm not shy anymore, but back when I was really shy, like, oh, I'm sort of making these things in my studio and they're not really, I don't really want to show them to anyone. You know,
you can't see it, but I made it.
Which is funny because a lot of what I made was very small.
Very small, yeah.
And you really couldn't see it.
So you couldn't
sweet.
See it. Yeah. But so that's sort of, it's just sort of snowballed because I love the people with the affiliated with the gallery, and you know, it's just it's an inspiring place to be, and I want to always keep my hands in art. I can't not. I mean, it's just the
way. So we might see you on Object Runway in the future.
Yeah.
Hopefully. I know you're a mom, you're working and yeah. all those things. I want to remind folks that they can see these garments Friday, mm-hmm. at First Friday at mm-hmm. the International Gallery on D Street.
427 D Street.
427 D Street. All right. Well, listen, we've had a great hour
thank
talking
you. It was
about.
Great.
Yeah, it's just been fabulous.
It flew by.
Yeah, and I want to thank Enzina Morari, Sarah Davies, Michael Conti, and Elise Rose.
And Hal Gage,
yep. who called
Wyoming,
in.
Wyoming, Telford.
Oh, yeah.
and thanks, Holly McQuinn and Karen Lowell. Our next week's Hometown Alaska host, Charles Wolforth, will be speaking with UAA's new chancellor, Tom Case. Please connect with us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Alaska Public. Our website is alaskapublic.org. Pat Yak is Vice President of Public Media. Kristen Spack is our web editor and audio engineer. Thanks for joining us today on Hometown Alaska. I'm Kathleen McCoy.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400. This is KSKA Anchorage.